Blog Talk Radio.
So I'm hoping that she is online. Pat?
Yes.
Perfect.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but by chance,
are you on speaker?
No, I'm not.
Okay, I don't really know what's happening with the reception there. But I would like for everyone to have a better show, and I have an echo. So let's hang up and try, and you call me back in about two minutes, if you would, please.
Okay, sure. Thank you. From my audience, I'm sorry, but we're trying to get the best sound for you
because this is a very important interview. So stay tuned, and I'll be right back.
Okay, let's see if we can bring Patricia back on the line.
Pat? Hello? Okay, well, we are connected. But we still seem to have the echo.
Yes, there's an echo, there's bad reception on the end there.
So I tell you what, we're going to hang up and try to call in again and see if we can get a better connection.
Give me three minutes to call back into the studio for me, please.
Thank you.
Hello, Patricia.
Hello.
Hello.
Muted.
Patricia.
Hello.
Well, I think we finally got it with no static and no feedback. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, I'm so sorry for the technical difficulty that we experienced, and I'm hoping that you won't have to live through that before we get to this very interesting and very important interview today with the first African-American flight attendant for a commercial airline, Patricia Banks Edmonston. And she's with us today in honor of Black History Month to be able to tell her story and to enlighten us all as to the history of her fighting for our civil rights in the sky. Good morning, Patricia. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Good morning, Casey.
Man, that was some difficulty, right?
It was, but it sounds like we're okay now.
It sure does. There's no feedback at all. So you, please, give us a little bit. I'm going to turn the whole thing over to you, but would you just give us a little background as to who you are, how this all happened, how a little girl from New York had the courage to take all the airlines to court and sue them and win for discrimination. So would you just give us a little intro on you and what it took and the courage it took for you to do what you did, and I thank you so much for opening up the door for me. So please start.
Thank you for having me. Well, it all began when I was a college student and I had seen an article in one of the New York magazines on the Grace Downs Air Career School. And it sounded like a great opportunity. It would give me a chance to travel. So I went to the school, I was accepted into the school, went through full training, and began to have interviews. And the interviews were with the first three were TWA, Mohawk Airlines, and Capital Airlines. And, of course, there were no results, and, of course, I was a little depressed. I couldn't understand why I was not being hired. And then one of the chief hostesses for Capital Airlines saw me coming out of the building one day, and she just looked at me and she said, "Pat, I hate to see you go through this, but I must let you know that the airline industry does not hire, at that time we were called Negroes, they do not hire Negroes in flight." Well, that upset me very, very much for the mere fact that as a young person, I had become very interested in the discrimination in the South and was not very aware of too much discrimination in New York, although I had encountered it. And I spoke to a friend of mine that day, Fred Weaver. He was commissioner of housing. And Pop, we used to call him, referred me to Congressman Adam Clayton Powell. We met and we talked, and I told him the story. He referred me to the New York State Commission Against Discrimination. They took the case. The case against Mohawk and TWA, the statute of limitations had run out, so we really could not take them to court, but we could take Capital Airlines, which was a top five airline and a southern airline, who claimed that the New York State had no jurisdiction over them. However, in 1956, we filed a complaint against Capital Airlines, and the investigation included TWA and Mohawk. Personnel records were reviewed from years back, and until that date, it was found that the airlines did not hire Negroes in flight. Now, that was not only flight attendants, but pilots as well. TWA, during the investigation, did hire a young lady named Margaret Grant. Unfortunately, Margaret was hired in the summer of 57, could not fly because of a personal illness. Carol Taylor was hired on Mohawk in December of 57. This was a regional aircraft which only flew from New York to Albany, and so it really didn't have an impact on the airlines admitting flight attendants. She flew for only about 2 months. And then my case, through many other investigations of other airlines, they felt that they had enough to prove the case of discrimination. My case went to court. Yes, Casey?
Yes. Okay. I said, okay. It's quite interesting so far, this history you're giving us. The background is wonderful.
Thank you. So the case went to court in 1960. And Capital Airlines, before the case went to court, stated that New York State had no jurisdiction over them because they were based in Virginia. However, they would come to Greystown's Air Career School to interview hostesses. So that claim was not valid. So they were taken to court in 1960. We took Capital Airlines to court in 1960. The court ordered Capital Airlines to hire me within 30 days or it would go to the Supreme Court. And, of course, they did hire me in February of 1960. That was the beginning. Yes.
That was the beginning. Well, at any time, because it was such a long period, you're saying at least 4 years between you filing and the investigation, were you discouraged? Did you think it was not going to go any further?
You know, I wasn't going to let it happen. I had, as I said, studied the racial problems in the South from a little girl. I could never understand it and always felt something had to be done. When I went to high school, it was an all-white high school, and I had a teacher tell me, she would ask me, where was I born? And I'd say, I was born in Harlem, born and raised in Harlem. She would tell me, oh, no, you're from Yemen. I had experienced enough problems before my experience with the airline. When I was told that they did not hire Negroes, my intent was to see, no matter what I had to do, that someone was hired. It didn't have to be me, but a black person was going to be hired at some point. I was not going to give up on this.
Well, thank you so much for doing that, and that was a brave thing for you to do back then. But, you know, when you have that fight in your spirit and you know what is wrong, you have to justify or to correct, I won't say justify, you have to correct that wrong. And that's what your little feisty fight was all about. I can see, knowing you all these years, you were not going to take that as an answer.
Not at all. It took a lot of investigation. It took a lot of time. But I was so grateful that we had won the case. And the funny part, I had friends who were in Korea who sent me letters. This information of this court procedure was all over the world. I received letters from Germany, from Korea, North Korea, would you believe that? I mean, all over. So this information spread quite rapidly.
Supporting your effort.
It just showed. And the ironic part about this case, the next flight attendant was not hired until 1967. So this shows you how solid this racist attitude was about blacks in flight. It took all those years to hire anyone else, and that should show you they really did not want us on board.
Well, you know, I have my own personal history and story. As you know, I flew for Delta, and our very first black African-American flight attendant was Patricia Grace Murphy, and they did not hire anyone until 1966.
Correct.
So the very first one for, well, at that point, maybe we could even say then the very first one for a commercial airline was Patricia Murphy. If they hired her in 1966, I'm not aware of the first one for, you were the first one, if they didn't hire another one to 67.
I was the first hired on a commercial aircraft.
For commercial.
Yes.
And if Patricia,
in other words,
Murphy,
Carol Taylor was hired in 57 on what we called an original.
A regional.
Flew like from New York to Albany to Syracuse. It did not fly out of New York State.
Absolutely, no. So there's a difference. And for people who don't know, obviously commercial are the larger airlines and the regional ones that hop from little.
Exactly.
You know, little,
Capital Airlines was one of the top five airlines at that time.
Okay.
And they were also a Southern aircraft.
Okay.
And I was just thinking the other day, it was ironic because when I resigned from Capital, they wanted me to stay because there was a merger occurring between Capital and United Airlines. If I had stayed, I would have also been the first on United Airlines. And may have been the first before the merger. I probably was the first before the merger actually took its total completion.
Yes.
Because it was in the process at the time I was still flying for Capital Airlines.
My goodness. Well, that's something that I have to do some more research on, because if you're saying the other person was hired in 1967, and my records show
that... I believe
it
was 1967, I believe.
Yeah, and my records show that Patricia Murphy was the very first one for Delta Airlines. Then I need to go back, or someone needs to do some research and find out, then would that make Patricia the first one for the commercial?
I think, no, I think United, the next one that was hired, I believe, was in United, and then Continental.
And what years were those, though, do you know?
Those were many, it was like 65 or 67
okay.
that they were hired.
All right.
It was like
so,
1965, I believe.
Okay.
I have a
so
record, I just have not, you know, renewed the recordings. There's so much dates and information
Absolutely.
That's available.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Excuse me. Well,
but
once
the
again,
the main focus for this particular suit was the fact that this was a Southern airline. I was being hired on a Southern airline before the civil rights movement came into effect. And my first trip was to Little Rock, Arkansas, which at that time was having problems racially. I believe there were some killings in Little Rock, Arkansas at the time. And my first flight was to Little Rock, Arkansas.
Mm. Now, were you aware of, obviously, before you got there, did you have problems with the hotels when they were having problems in the city? Did it also affect you as far as being able to get a room?
Well, my trip, I had a trip to Alcoa, Tennessee. It was a three-day trip. And the director of operations had invited me to stay at his home. But I was not giving much thought. I said, no, thank you. I will stay with the crew. So I stayed at this place called the Joy Motel in Alcoa, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the Joy Motel had outbid a hotel in Alcoa, Tennessee. Now, I stayed in that motel for 3 days. I did have a maid walk in shock. She looked at me and said to me, this must be your first time here. I paid it no attention. When I left 3 days later, the director of Capital Airlines called me, and I had caused a riot in Alcoa, Tennessee, because the hotel spread a rumor that the motel that I stayed in was integrating. So there was a riot in Tennessee because of my stay at that motel. From there on, my next flight was to Atlanta, Georgia. Security met me at the gate to directly take me to a black motel.
So you weren't allowed to stay with the crew?
No.
Did you understand the ramp? I'm sorry?
Yeah, not in the South. No, I was not. Not after the incident in Tennessee.
Did you know they were rioting?
I was told when I arrived back at my base in Detroit, Michigan, that I had caused a riot in Alcoa, Tennessee, because I stayed at this motel which was not integrated. So I guess I was the first black person that ever stayed at this Joy Motel in Tennessee.
But you had no idea that was going on while you were there, though.
No.
Because you stayed in your room for 3 days.
I think maybe I became a little overconfident at that time, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I had no idea. There was no incidents with me. I went. I met some black people from Tennessee, and they would take me when I would get up in the morning for breakfast and take me into a black area to eat. So I never ever thought that I was going to encounter this. But when I left, I was told that there was a riot. And so therefore security met me from there on in any flights to the south to take me to black motels.
Oh, my goodness. Little did you know the mark in history that you made. You had no idea.
None, but you know, the gratitude was is that it began. The gratitude was that we won. And I had two marvelous attorneys with the commission, Mary Brown and Solomon Heifetz. Mary was a black attorney. Solomon Heifetz was a Jewish attorney. And they both worked diligently for all those years to investigate the airlines that I named and many others to determine whether this discrimination case was valid in a court of law.
You know, so many thoughts are going through my mind and so many things I want to say because I've listened to the first Delta flight attendant, as I said, it's Patricia Murphy, and her stories. But I don't believe, because obviously you broke and you opened up the doors for all of us, but to say that there was a riot and going back in history, be able to say this riot happened because of you, that in itself is something that's just mind-boggling because, as you said, you were from New York. These different things you were just not even subjected to. You knew because we all know history. But then for you to be a part of changing the attitude and the mindset of Southern people was monumental.
Well, it was quite historic and quite mind-boggling for me because I had no idea of the danger that I was put in. And, of course, as I said, in the future, they made sure security met me at the gate and took me to black motels.
Now, what would the white flight attendants say when they saw this happening to you?
Well, actually, you know, when I first started flying, the flight attendants would say things to me like, you know, the NAACP is paying your salary. I'd say, no, Capital Airlines is paying my salary. And many of them would look at me and say, oh, you must be based in New Orleans. And I would say, no, I'm not based in New Orleans. I'm a Negro. I had a passenger get on the plane one time, and he said to me, oh, you must be from northern India. And I said, no, sir, I'm from northern Africa. And he almost passed out. Oh, I had a passenger on a DC-3 who said to me, I'm deathly afraid of planes. Would you please hold my hand when you finish? I sat down, I held his hand, and this man said to me, have you ever been to Montana? I said, no, sir. He said, there's beautiful green trees, green grass, no niggers and no winos. I had to go through this.
You had to go through that humiliation. Did you correct him? Did you let him know that you were
African American? I didn't say anything because there was always that line where my inner anger about this racist situation could be negative.
And explosive.
My traveling that I did, I had to hold a lot of this inside. I had to be the lady. I felt I may not have even been normal in many instances, but I had to show these people that a black woman could do this job. So I maintained a sense of calmness. The anger would not be allowed to come out from me because it would not have accomplished anything during this journey.
You're absolutely right because you were on a mission and it was a personal mission, but it also turned out to be the larger than you because you opened the doors for all of us, all the blacks, women of color, to be able to be hired by an airline. And I had read an article where they stated that if a black person entered this career, it would diminish the integrity of the job.
Interesting.
So those are some of the things that you were fighting against when they did not want to hire you but were made to hire you.
Exactly.
That was the mindset.
I just made up my mind before I began to even fly that I had to maintain myself. I would pray. I knew that I had to set an example and that I could not destroy that example as a black woman.
Yes.
That I would give them nothing negative to say about anything that I did. So
yes.
God gave me the ability to do the best I could on this job so I would not make it wrong or hard for anybody else to get this job. There would be nothing they could say.
Or close the door.
There's nothing they could say. They weren't
yes.
going to close the door on my people. That wasn't going to happen.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, I learned such a lesson on how subtle racism is in the United States. And it still exists.
It
so
does
subtle
exist.
Because when I think about, if I had not gone for this job, look how many people would have not known that blacks were not pilots, that blacks were not flight attendants. They would have not known because
they would
back
never
in
have
those
known.
Era, black people didn't fly that much. You know, black people didn't have the income to just fly around.
Absolutely.
So very
but you know,
few
you,
people realized it.
Well, you say that, and you we put it as if it's something in the past of them not knowing. But you know what amazes me is when we still look at programs or you look at the news and you see, and it says the very first black. So that's still happening to us, and we're not aware of it until the first person walks through the door and then someone realizes,
exactly.
oh, this is the first black. We just got our first, and I'm speaking we as Delta, we just got our first black pilot, female captain a few years ago. So we're still saying the same thing that you just said. Had you not done what you did, we would never have known. We would not have been aware of. We would have just accepted it. And so these people, there are people nowadays still making history. And that's still a shame and feels that we just take it for granted that there are some blacks that work there or in
you
that
know,
capacity.
It's, just that, it's so much that has to be done. My son, Sherman Edmiston, is supporting a young lady. She is from Africa, I believe, I can't think of the name of the organization. I saw it on TV the other day where she's tutoring and working with young black children at very young ages. The thing is, they have to study from young ages. We can't allow our kids to just float.
Yes.
We must work with them because they have to learn to keep the focus. And if there's something they want to do, they can't let anything distract them. They've got to keep
Absolutely.
The focus, keep the direction, and they will accomplish their goals.
And that is so true. And that is the beginning of, and I'm sure, a lot of your determination in your fight came because you were never told you couldn't do something. You never thought you couldn't accomplish something. And if you don't instill that in our youth, they never will have that drive. And that is exactly where it starts.
It starts with young people, and you've got to work with them. We need more done with our children. More concentration needs to be put into the school system. Our children need to start at very young ages on learning how to keep the focus on what it is they want to do and what they're doing. And it can be done.
Well,
it can be done. We can't let the society overtake what our goals are.
No, we can't. And that's important. One of the things that I was so happy to have you, the reason I was so happy to have you on the radio show is because people are not aware of what you did. People aren't aware of the black flight attendant struggle. And it's important to me to get the message out. And you are still with us. You were here to tell us these wonderful stories that if it's not documented, will never be told. And
well,
so it's such an.
I'm sorry, Casey. Go ahead.
And so it's important. It's like you just said, in education. You are history. You're not just black history. You are history. Because yet that was a challenge to take everyone. How did the airlines, I want to get back to going back into the past now. How did the airlines treat you when you they were ordered by court to hire you? So therefore, there must have been some resentment. So when you came on board with the airline, how did management treat you?
Management was pretty gentle. The president of the airline welcomed me. Most of the time, it was just on staff, a lot of questions. And as I said, unfortunately, a lot of them didn't even know I was the Negro that was being hired. So I had to constantly remind people, I am that person. I'm being paid by the same people you are. I don't have a tan. I'm not based in New Orleans. Passengers would question me. But you know what? A little girl said to me, she said to me, my mommy has somebody home like you.
Oh, my.
This was a little
but
girl.
Let me take a pause because the switchboard is lighting up, and there's a caller that would like to say something to you. So let's just take a call for the moment and get back to your story, okay?
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. So just a moment. Hello, caller. This is Casey Grant, host of the Fly Girl Show. Thank you for calling in.
Hello, Casey Grant, and hello, Patricia. This is Deborah Surrett. I don't know if you remember me, but we met at the flight attendant luncheon, the Black Flight Attendant Luncheon, and you graced us with your presence, and you were the most beautiful, fantastic surprise for all of the flight attendants there at the luncheon. And we missed you this year. I so wanted you to be there. And I know you couldn't come,
but I'd love to.
Oh, it was fabulous when you came. I mean, you lit up that room. It was so wonderful to spend the day with you and to meet you. It was such an honor, and I really hope you can join us again because you made that day so special for us.
Thank you so much. Just give me a call, and I'll be there.
Okay. Well, Casey set it up before, and so we spent the day together. And we, I don't know if you remember or not, but when we came through the airport, you had celebrity status. They escorted you to security. It was wonderful. It was really wonderful.
What an honor.
Oh, the honor is mine. I could talk to you all day because you are just such a gracious lady, and you have such good stories, and we can't get enough of them. We need your history. Your history is important.
Well, you know, the History Makers did an oral interview of me about a year ago, and I just received the information a couple of months ago that the oral interview has been put into the Library of Congress in Washington.
I love it. I love
it. One of the main things, let me just say this, one of the main things that my biggest concern is that we have a history of blacks in aviation beginning with Bessie Coleman in 1924. Our African-American museums have not covered this. Our history begins in 1924, and not one of our black American museums, history museums, has our complete story.
That's unfortunate.
And I have been working on, and I won't mention any names of the organization I've been trying to get, but I've been trying to get a public event of blacks in aviation because it's not just me. There's a lot of us who fought.
Oh,
I just happened to be the first one that may have started in 1960, but a lot of us had to fight for their positions.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Bessie Coleman was a pilot that had to go to Europe to get a license to fly. The United States wouldn't give her one because she was black.
Isn't
so we have a history that people need to know.
Yes, we do.
We really do. And you know what? And that is the goal of the book, Stars in the Sky, is to get the history out to tell. Because, as you know, my book does mention Bessie Coleman. One of the stories that I love to tell, being from this area, and Deborah lives close to this area, Robbins, Illinois. That was the very first black-owned airstrip. and two men who were custodians taught themselves to how to fly because they collected information out of the garbage cans. The instructors would teach the white. They were not allowed to go to the school. They told them they could be a janitor, but they could not go to the class, be admitted to the school.
Wow.
So they collected the paperwork, the study guides, and the garbage, and they studied all night, and they taught themselves how to fly. They built an airplane and taught themselves how to fly. That is history that even people in Robbins, Illinois, don't even know. So
exactly.
You're so right about honoring all those that were first or pioneers. I say it's more hidden black aviation history because it really is. People don't know about
someone, it. I know. Someone mentioned to me the other day, he said, they talk about hidden figures. He said, Pat, you're one of the hidden.
Yes.
And
are.
The thing is, when I was inducted into the Black Aviation Hall of Fame in 2010 in Memphis, Tennessee, there were 9 men with me who were inducted. Their history was amazing. They weren't pilots, but they were in the aviation industry. They were CEOs. We never hear of them. I have
never.
The book. I've held on to the program because maybe someday I can get someone to do an event on blacks in aviation. That is
well,
one
I will
my
work
goals
with
before
you.
I leave out of here.
I will work
my
with
friend
you.
Keeps saying she's 80, almost 83, and she's still alive and kicking, you know.
Yeah.
Praise God.
Do something. You know what I mean?
And kicking.
Let's do something.
Well,
but it's a lot.
Thank you. Well, you know, thank you, caller, for calling in, Deborah. We really appreciate it. And please continue to listen to the rest of the interview that Pat is we still have another, like, 15 more minutes. So let me get some more good history out of her. And I appreciate you calling.
Okay, thank you so much. And,
thank
Pat, it was so nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you, and hope to see you again.
I hope so as well. And, Casey, I need some more books. Stars
okay, no
sky.
Problem. I will be sending you books.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So that was wonderful. And later on, we will talk about that wonderful event. It was the flight attendants, the Bronze Wings, and it's a luncheon that is held in Atlanta for all flight. And it was so nice that they honored you. And you were mentioned. So you weren't there physically, but you definitely were there in spirit. And everyone was so thrilled to have met you.
It was such a pleasure. And, you know, outside of Delta, another airline that has supported blacks in aviation is American Airlines.
Okay.
They've invited me to speak. And they did a video on me several years ago. I think it was in maybe 2010.
Okay.
They did a video. So they've also been very supportive of blacks in aviation.
Well, I think, and as I told you, you know, you have my commitment to continue to work with you because I think it is very important to have this event to honor those in aviation. And you're right, it's not just the flight attendants, it's the pilots. Because your situation of having to take the airlines to court to get hired by a commercial airline, it happened to the first black male flight attendant. Pilot. The same situation. He was hired on paper, and when he appeared and they saw he was black, they rescinded the job opportunity. Mm-hmm. So he had
Marlon
to take
Green
them to court.
Marlon Green was hired in 1963. Marlon Green.
Marlon Green. So
was
they,
hired
thank
in 1963
so
on Continental Airlines.
There you go.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Casey.
Well, he had to fight the same battle that you did. And we're talking from 56 to 62, you said?
1963 he was hired.
63. Yes, still fighting that battle in aviation.
Right.
In
I
aviation.
I think the span of time that anyone else was hired after me indicates the racism, how strong it was.
How reluctant they were to try
to hire anyone.
Absolutely.
In between. One person.
Well,
not
that's
one.
What affirmative action did. Delta had blacks, but they were cleaning the airplane.
They were
did
all ground workers.
Or ground workers, the sky caps. Mm-hmm. So, yes, they did have blacks in working for the airline. But they did not have a flight attendant until 1966.
Exactly.
And we still didn't hire our male, first male, African-American male, until 72.
Right.
That was Eugene Harmon.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
And he was
Eugene
the first, so
Harmon.
Look how long. Yeah.
From 66 to 72.
Because people didn't even know there weren't any pilots that were black.
Absolutely.
Until
I think it was 70.
The newspapers started printing the stories that, you know, about my case.
Yeah.
People didn't know.
And let me make a correction about Eugene. I believe it might have been 73. 72 or 73 is when Eugene Harmon was hired, and he's still flying to this day. So he's still holding the torch. But he was the very first one that Delta hired. Male, African-American male flight attendant. That's
right, Molly,
a long
was
span.
1963 on Continental. And just look at the difference.
Yes.
Just look at the difference.
Yes. And if you want to bring it up to the figures for today, it's still not to the percentage that it should be.
But I
was reading something, just speaking on Delta, I was reading something, an article that my nephew sent me, and it said, getting into Harvard is easier than getting hired as a flight attendant. Now, this is all races. Hired for a flight attendant for Delta Airlines.
Mm.
Now, that is, those are astonishing
figures
to me.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Because everyone would love to go. So we went through, so we've got a couple more minutes now since we had such technical difficulties this morning. But the glamour part of it, you know, we've gone through the real story and the most important story of it. But how did you enjoy the career for the small time frame that you flew? Was it just the most exciting career ever?
It was exciting, and I think it was just the fact that something was accomplished.
Okay.
Something was accomplished. I've had many wonderful careers in my lifetime. I became involved in 1970 with a drug abuse problems in New York. I worked for the New York State Office of Alcohol and Substance Abuse Services for 25 years. And after I retired, I did consultant work in a drug rehab in Harlem. I was also director of disaster team for the American Red Cross. I worked with Medical Wings. I traveled with them, providing medical services around the world.
Oh, my.
Around 2002, and that was sponsored by American Airlines. And that, to me, was also a wonderful experience of giving to the poor around the world. We traveled to Africa, Guatemala. We were all over, and it was the most exciting experience. It gave me a feeling of just, I mean, I can't even express what it felt like.
But let me interrupt you real quick, please, because there's one more. We're going to take one more caller before the show is over.
Surely.
And so, like I said, the switchboard is really lighting up, so this is a lucky person that I'm picking now. So let's take one more call. And see, because there's someone that's anxiously wanting. Hello there. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, good morning. Surprise, Mary and Beckett speaking. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. You called to talk to the first African-American commercial flight attendant, I see.
Yes. Hi, Patricia. I was just calling to thank you for your wonderful, wonderful work and listening to you speak all of the experiences that you shared. I hope that the other callers will get as much out of it as I did.
I always think
it's a blessing when we can share information with some others who may have no clue about some of the things that have happened in the past.
Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. And I look forward to us getting together again. I think it's marvelous that you've been able to share this with us.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. And Pat,
if you need more, let me know, okay?
I would like to, once again, wrap it up because we only have like about five more minutes. So these are the different things that you have done since you left the airline, which is very, I mean, so fulfilling, so remarkable, so diverse. Now, I heard that you are teaching Tai Chi to senior citizens? Could that
possibly
be true?
Well, I do help out. I received a black belt in Shotokan when I was 67, and then the young people were just killing me, so I switched over to a Master Abdul Masawer, who teaches Tai Chi. However, it's not the Tai Chi you see moving slowly. And now I'm studying the Chinese bow staff, and I will be performing on Tai Chi Day, which is the last Saturday around the world. And I will be performing at our event in the Bronx at Mullally Park on the last Saturday of April, which is the 25th, I believe. So I'm still trying to move, still trying to keep going.
And you said you were 82?
I'll be 83 in April.
Well,
83
you were my,
in April.
You are definitely my hero. I would love to be able to think that I was as flexible as you, but I don't I don't really think I can say that, but at least I have something to work up to.
You know, I just try to keep this mind functioning because, sadly enough, my mother passed away from dementia, and that is something that I would never, ever want to have. So I try to do everything they say to do to keep the brain active. So that's why
and
I'm
the body.
It, Casey. Yes, and the body, you know, because
and the body.
They say, you know, three things. You have to eat well, you have to move, and you have to sleep well. And I try to do that so that I can stay alive. I have seven wonderful grandchildren. I want to be here for them. And I'm just happy and content, you know, two wonderful grown children. And I'm just blessed, and I just want to be here for them as long as I can.
Well, you know, it's all a blessing, and we can do everything that we're supposed to do to help. But you are blessed. We are blessed. All the callers at the switchboard, I'm so sorry that I wasn't able to get the other callers in. But for the two that did call in that we were able to talk to, I know that they feel honored to have been able to talk to you and definitely to enjoy this radio interview. Because we think we know, well, the ones who have gone through the earlier flight attendants, we went through our own discrimination and we all have
exactly.
our own stories. But to know and to talk to the first person or the person who is responsible for opening up the doors for us is absolutely such an honor. And for me to be able to call you my partner in crime and my friend.
Yes, we are.
Because
yes, we are.
You and I will be speaking at a business, a flight, it's an aviation business convention in May in Hartford, Connecticut. So I am so looking forward to us sharing
I'm
the stage together.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm
and sharing and
that.
Telling our story. And we would definitely recap that. Well, I'll have you back on and we can go back through and share the experience with everyone. But is there anything, you know, if there was anything that you could say or plug that you could send out, I know that you're working so hard in trying to get someone to be a sponsor for this organization. Are there any words that you would like to leave this program with that may touch someone who is listening to come and to contact us, to help us with this? Once again, just kind of, you know, express the importance of what you are trying to do.
I just think that black Americans and blacks all over the world have made a lot of progress in so many areas that exist in the United States and the world. And I think our black children, in order for them to feel confident, to feel that ability to be able to accomplish their goals in life, they have to know their history. And they have to know how black people have fought in their lifetime to accomplish their goals in this country. We need to inform our young people of what our history is about. They need to know. They need to know. And it's just an honor, Casey, to be speaking with you. It's an honor to be your friend. And I do hope that those people who are working with young people continue. We need to let them know that we can do it, that we can accomplish anything we want to. Thank you so much.
Well, I really appreciate it, and thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today. And I think that's a powerful message that you're leaving us with, and it follows not only just in aviation, which is my heart throb, is aviation, but it's the history. Because if you don't know your history, you can't understand the accomplishments and the pride of what we have all gone through and had to have to get where we are. And for you, and I'm just amazed every time I think about it and in knowing you, how tall are you, 5'3"? And you probably weighed 100 pounds when you took on the whole world
about
for this job, for the opportunity. But you had so much riding on your little shoulders, but you stood up like a 7-foot basketball player, as tall as and as strong as you could possibly be, because you knew how important it was. And I tell you, I am so grateful every day. When I was doing the research for my book and I ran across you, your information, it was such an honor the first time I called your house and you said hello. I will never forget that thrill, because you are history. You are what young people need to know and to understand. Don't ever allow someone to tell you no. You put up a fight and you go after what you want, because no one can stop you when you're determined. So with that being the case, I am going to close this wonderful show today and allow you to go do your Tai Chi or do whatever it is that you do, because I know you're not just going to sit up and watch TV.
No, part of the day I will, I think. But I do want to thank you, Casey, for doing the book Stars in the Sky.
Oh, you are so welcome.
Thank you so much for that.
It's my part. So I will allow you to leave now. Thank you so much for taking time. And once again, for my audience, I am so sorry for the technical difficulty that we experienced this morning. I hope that you will pass the show on, tell everyone how important it is that they will listen to and be able to meet over my radio show the first African-American commercial flight attendant. Excuse me for my voice. So please tune in or stay tuned on my website to see what other shows I will be bringing you for the rest of the year. Once again, this is Casey Grant. This is the Fly Girl Show, and have a blessed day. Thank you. Mm-hmm.